it helps me and other people.
Side two of the October 16th, 1986 interview with Grady Levins of Apalachicola. The interviewer is David Taylor.
In their jobs, were there other types of responsibilities that they had?
Yes, but just kind of following it through. Then we have a forklift operator, and he provides oysters for the people to wash, the people to shuck, and then he also is responsible for loading trucks. So, and then you get into our packing area. I have it all the time. I have two people in there. And then move on through to our office here. We have our secretary, controller, Alice, and myself, and then our sales personnel office back here. And we have four route salesmen, truck driver type people, you know. So all in all, I guess, as you know, just other than the shuckers, we probably have anywhere from 16 to 20 other people working here also.
Do you handle things besides oysters?
Oh, yes. Yes, we grade a few shrimp, freeze and package them. We buy and we unload fish boats, grouper, snapper, shark. And then we buy a lot of other items like, you know, fishes, tuna, crab meat. We even bring in season Louisiana crawfish and sell that. And I have a clam boat, forgotten about him, Port St. Joe Bay.
Oh, yeah.
That harvest the hard clams for half shell consumption, steaming consumption. We sell a lot of clams in a week's time.
How does this fellow harvest the clams?
He has about a 50-foot boat, converted shrimp trawl, and has a drag or a dredge. I prefer drag. Department of Natural Resources prefers dredge. Mm-hmm. But it has teeth, and it just kind of skids across the bottom. Mm-hmm. It has like a water skis or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's very, very heavy. Mm-hmm. And it sinks right to the bottom, and then he starts to pull it, and it's a sled-type operation to keep from burying up in the mud. It has teeth that finger down into the mud, and as it comes over the clams, they just come back up into to the drag itself. And he has like a shrimp net tail on it, a bag on it, and then he'll pull it for probably 3 to 5 minutes and bring it up into this wheel wash and wash the mud out, reset it. He'll do that about 5 times, and then winch it aboard the boat and dump the tail bag. And he also a lot of times have about 5 bushels of clams or better per 15-minute, 20-minute drag, something like that. And then he grades them, and there's about 5 grades of clams, the very largest being the chowder. Then you have a regular cherry, which could go up from 2 3/4 inch greater dimensions, or 3 inch to 3 1/4 as your regular cherry. Then you have a perfect cherry, which is like 2.5 to 3 inches. And then you have a top neck, which is a rule of thumb the size of half dollar to a silver dollar. And then you have your little neck, which is quarter to about a half dollar size. And unlike most things, the smaller clam, the more expensive it is. We've been marketing this clam for about 5 years, I guess. And we've learned a lot about the little creature, and we do good with it. And the most popular clam comes off the eastern coast of Florida and on up to Chesapeake area. The problem that we've had with this one is that it's the nature of the beast to open and close for some reason or another. And every time it opens, it loses a little liquor out, and then it finally gets weak and dies. And like the other clam, they do not do that. And if we could keep it from doing that, we would have one heck of a shelf life.
Yeah.
But so far, I mean, here when I first started marketing the darn things, we'd stand out there and put rubber bands on them to keep them closed up. Really, it worked.
Do what worked?
Yeah.
Speaking of grading, what are the different grades of oysters?
On the shucked oysters, to start with the smallest, would be a standard size, which is larger than 250 count per gallon. Mm-hmm. And kind of rule of thumb, select is from around 200 to 240, 250. An extra select is 180 to 200. A count is 150 to 180. And count's about as large as you get. And they get to be, when you get 150 oysters to a gallon, that's pretty good size oysters. Yeah.
Do fishermen, oystermen have names for oysters that are different from those based on the size or shape or color of the shell?
The fishermen have names for the shell oysters, yes. All right, and it's size and shape. All right, the most preferred for half shell consumption is what we call a cup oyster, mm-hmm. 3 inches, in dimension. And then you have what I would call a fan blade, which is between a cup and a scissor bill. Mm-hmm. Now, then you have scissor bill, which is kind of a long, skinny type shell oyster. That is, that type oyster right there is no good for half shell because they're thinner type shell. They don't hold up that long. Their shelf life is not as great, but they're excellent for shucking. Mm-hmm. And the shucker, since it is a thinner type oyster, and since, the shuckers do kind of hit them with a hammer to break the bill off of the machine, they're much easier on them. They're easier to open also.
Do all of these occur out here in the bay?
Yes, and what determines the size and shape of an oyster is the type bottom that it is grown on. Now, a cup oyster is grown on a hard type gravel bottom. Mm-hmm. A fan blade is somewhere between a mud bottom, and a scissor bill is a mud type oyster, And then the fan blade is in between the two, and that comes off a bottom in between mud and hard gravel type.
But are these all the same species of oyster?
Oh, yeah. Huh. All the same species, but then the bottom determines the shape and size.
If I brought in a handful of oysters and they're different colors and sizes, could you tell where they're from in the bay?
In this bay, I can, yes.
Really?
Yeah. See, to mention some of the names, Cat Point is East Point area, and actually that bar oyster bed goes from one side of the bay to the other, really, and it's cut in channels by two different channels, and you moving from the north to the south, you have Cat Point, then you've got Peanut Ridge, which these are cup type oysters, and then you move on, and then kind of off to one side there's a lump, and that's called Monkey's Elbow.
Okay.
I don't have any idea. I think it's just the shape like an elbow, and I don't know why they call it Monkey's Elbow. But then you move on across the bay over there to East Hole. East Hole is where the intercoastal waterway goes through. And then right up close to the beach over there on the island side, there's an oyster bed, and they call that the inshore dry bar, which the reason they call it a dry bar is when we have these northwest winds and low tides, a lot of the oyster bed would come out of the water for a short period of time, and you can actually get out and pick oysters up out of your boat then, and I've done a lot of that also. But then we have the offshore dry bar, and the best I've ever done, me and this partner of mine picked up 44 sacks of oysters in four hours.
Wow.
So that was, but then it's one of the hardest northwest winds I've ever seen, and the bay was so shallow we could hardly get out there to it, and the tide went further out and left the boat high and dry on the on the oyster bed. But what I would do is just take a wheelbarrow on board the boat, and when we'd have oysters stacked all over the place in sacks, and then once we got them all picked up, and when the tide would start back in, then we'd pick them up off the oyster bed that was out of the water and transport them to the boat and wheelbarrow.
Wow. Like good times.
Hard work. That'll kill you there.
Mm. But all these places would have a particular shape that.
That's right.
That was characteristic.
That is correct. Mm. But that was just to very fast. Then moving back to the west, you have a hotel bar. Then you've got St. Vincent Oyster Bed. And then further down, you've got what they call the miles, where there's oyster beds. There's a lot of oyster beds in this bay, and I know just a few of them named, not very many, because I don't think some of them even named. If nobody can figure out what the name is of a particular bed, they just call it a lump.
I've been wondering about the length of time that there have been family-run seafood companies. What are some of the older ones that are here in Apalachicola?
Well, there's, if I can think of his name, Mr. Willifred Randolph. Okay, Mr. Randolph is probably closer to 80 years old. He's got a business card that he had a price published on back when he was in the seafood business. And I think the oyster price is 50 cents a gallon. So you can imagine how long ago that's been. And then jumbo shrimp, 5 cents a pound. So, you know, that was probably 60 years ago.
When you look at all the seafood companies here, does everyone do the same thing, or how would you classify them?
Well, people are, they're not really diversified. Like, we do other things, but we're our major line of oysters. And then you'll have someone that's heavily involved in shrimp, and that'll be all that he'll do. And then we have a shrimp peeling plant here. And that's about all he does is just peel shrimp and package
that.
Buddy Ward.
Oh, yeah.
And he does have a green headless operation back up the street up there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you've got your crab fishermen that harvest blue crab, and they go to the crab picking seafood places here. And then we have a peeling plant for soft crabs, where the fishermen build special traps to catch this peeler crab, and they can look at the fins on the crab and tell you, you know, within an hour just about when the sucker's going to shed. All right, so they put those in tanks and on their grade, because what will happen, a green blue crab that's already shedded, if another one shed, then they'll eat that soft crab before it finishes hardening back up again. But that's another phase of it.
What's the name of that company that handles the peeler crabs?
Now, Donnie Wilson has a peeling plant, and it should be in operation now. But he has one of his crabbers that's responsible for it, and again, you get into a whole different grade of crabs, because you've got whales and jumbos and prime and hotel prime, and you know, and whales being the largest, I think the hotel or hotel prime being the smallest.
Just the whole business of grading and these different things is really interesting. Mm-hmm. All the names that are, a lot of them I think been around for some time too.
Yes.
All the stainless steel equipment that you have out here, a lot of it I've never seen that kind of thing before. Where do you get those things?
It's specialty stuff, and it has to be special made or special built. And we have, any machine shop. I have a machine shop in Tallahassee that's done a lot of work for me, building this special equipment for me.
Are there any businesses around here that do that work?
Yes, there's one in East Point that is doing some of it, and it's Miller Welding or Southern Can. Jimmy Miller does it. He does a very good job, too. He's contributed a lot to the industry, in my opinion.
What is it about, or is there anything about your company that makes it distinctive from the others in this area?
Well, I like to think so. I think we've been, Alice and I both have been quite innovative, and we've made a lot of changes. We introduced the single oyster, the 100% single oyster, to the market.
What is that, 100% single?
Well, to where it takes, the culling takes place in the bay, where when I was talking about culling a while ago, I have always, as a fisherman when I was, been adjusted to catching a single oyster. And I said, well, where a lot of fishermen, if there's clusters, they'll just throw the whole lot in the sack at one time, because it takes more time to make singles out of them. But the single market has really put Apalachicola Bay on the map, because when you get into your real nice places, they don't want to have to pick up a cluster and shuck a dozen oysters out of one cluster, you know, for half shell trade. So they, in fact, have to cull them themselves. But we started paying more money for a 100% single oyster in a sack, and of course we could get more money for it. And this was an advantage for the fisherman because he could make more. But then we started washing them, and that was new to the industry. And then we were putting them back in the burlap sacks, and they were about to get dirty again, you know, and going right back in the same sack you came out of dirty. So we had a waxed cardboard box made. So we could get into the nicer rustic, your white apron, you know, white tablecloth places. And this has contributed a lot to the industry in Franklin County. When we moved here, when we started shucking gallons of oysters, the only gallon container you get was 10. You know, I just don't like metal because you scratch it a little bit, it's going to rust there. And it just didn't look that desirable. So, I contacted the company and had them make us plastic, very neat and clean, with the small containers of oysters that was metal. So I think we used the first plastic container for small, with small containers that there was. We introduced the first forklift pallet jacks to our business type world here. Now there's several companies around that have them. There was probably only maybe one other person that, or maybe two, that ran their own root systems. Well, we started that, and everybody does it, you know. So, with the washing machine that we have out here, which Miller engineered that. I made the first one there was around, which I think his concept was better than mine, but without mine, it couldn't have been improved upon,
right,
you know.
Right.
So, but I like to think that we've contributed to the industry. I think we've, we've certainly given it a facelift and opened new doors for everyone to sell to.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of contributions, I know, of course, that you were recognized for that with your King Retzo selection there a while back. Can you tell me about that and what that meant to you and what it was all about?
Well, that's quite an honor, I think. And Retzo is oyster spelled backwards. So this goes back. There's a story here in one of the magazines about the story of King Retzo. And one of our local people wrote it. It's quite a story. You have to read it. He was supposed to have been kicked out of his tribe because he couldn't bury any sons for the tribe. So the father shipped him off down Apalachicola River, and then and he was wading around in the water or something like that one day and stepped on an oyster that was open, and the oyster clamped down on his toe. So he put his toe in his mouth, and it tasted quite good. So he opened the oyster and ate it. So then this went on, for several years, and he was alone. And then all of a sudden, a great storm came up, and in order for the gods to keep from wiping out the entire Indian tribe, they put 144 maidens on boats and to sacrifice to the gods. So that where they ended up, right here. But anyway, that's kind of the story behind it, and they reenacted this King Retzo about 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
4 or 5 years. I know I was the one served twice, and I was the third one
mm-hmm.
To serve, and it's quite an honor position, and it's quite a garby outfit that you have to put on, but that goes with a name.
What is that? What's the outfit?
I have a picture here. I'll show it to you.
What, do you have any particular duties while you're in camp?
Yes, you do. Officially, you open up the Florida Seafood Festival, which you come down the river in a boat and get off and greeted by all the Seafood Festival committee plus the city fathers. And then that officially starts it on a Friday. And then Saturday morning, you ride in the parade and toss gifts to the children. then you tour the entire seafood festival and judge the food booths. Then you open up the dance, have the first dance with the Queen Saturday night, officially opening the dance. And I think that's about it. There's a couple other smaller things I can't remember right now.
Mm-hmm. And Bob Jones is going to be the king this year?
Yes, Bob Jones will be the king this year.
Well, I'll be around to see what he looks like.
And he's a very deserved person. He has contributed a great deal to the entire seafood industry for the southeastern United States.
What do you like about the work that you do?
It's a challenge. And, when I first... the other jobs that I had were routine, okay? I knew 2 days from now exactly what I'd be doing. And I enjoy a challenge, and I wake up in a new world every day now.
Mm-hmm. Anything you don't like about it?
Well, there's always some bad, but there's so much good that outweigh the little bad things that it's not even worth talking about.
What do you think the future holds for the industry?
Well, I'm really concerned about the oystering industry because the more people you have, the more pollution you have. And the line is getting further and further and further away from the river that you can harvest oysters at all times. And then with the Apalachicola River system and our neighboring states, Georgia and Alabama, their demand for water is growing and growing and growing. And without rises on the Apalachicola River flushing the nutrients in the bay, the oysters cannot survive. And this concerns me because we're looking at lower river readings than I've ever seen, even though I know we're in the midst of a drought. This is taking its toll on predation in the bay and good growth for oysters. There's answers to it, but then I'm afraid we're seeing the beginning of a new era for the oyster world, and that is to where you hatch them in laboratories, put them in controlled environments, and grow them off. Mm-hmm. And I mean I can see this is only a short time away, and which will destroy your good old natural flavor of an oyster. You can flavor him up in a controlled environment, but it's just not the same, you know. But I've seen overfishing, and I see the worst productive year that I've seen since I've been involved in it. And I don't think the future looks quite as well as I'd like to see it look. But I'm here,
yeah.
And I'm going to be here for whatever I have to do to stay here, you know.
I think I've asked all the questions I planned to. Is there anything you wanted to add? That sometimes I forget to ask something that's really important. Anything on your mind that you wanted to mention?
No, I may just carry this last statement a little further, and that is to say that down the road, even with added pollution and stuff like that, I can see depuration facilities going in to depurate oysters, which again is just going to drive the price right on up there. But and this could be 2-5 years away, 10 years away, you know, but it certainly, if the industry is going to survive, unless, you know, one fact that we both have to recognize is that a great number of our people in these United States love that product.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, there's always going to be a demand for it, irregardless of cost.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
This is the end of the October 16th, 1986 interview with Grady Levins, owner of Levins Seafood of Apalachicola, Florida. This interview was conducted by David Taylor of the Bureau of Florida Folklife Programs and was conducted in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project. End of tape.